Well, that was a request from one of our listeners from yesterday, according to Addison. So the Screaming Goat makes the return. Want to thank everybody for joining us this afternoon on Weather and Ag in Focus. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our Ag Director Bridget Riedel, and it's guess where Bridget is today. All right.
It kind of feels that way today. I've never really in the same spot that people would be looking for, so it happens.
Okay. You're not today, at home, I can tell that.
I'm not in my pickup. Originally, I was going to be in Britton, South Dakota at a bull sale, but due to some things having to change, I am now near Castleton, North Dakota at the PTI farm, and I'm going to be here for a John Deere sprayer clinic that's going to be happening this afternoon. So they kindly let me use one of the extra offices for right now, and of course, it's working out great for me. So just never know where I'll pop up these days.
Good, right? We got to have a contest. Guess where Bridget's at? Give away something
special.
Well,
and whether it's a contest or whether it's for our advertisers, if you want to sponsor wherever I might be, and we don't know where that always is, we could help you out because Lord knows there's plenty of travel in my days. And all right, so I'll do my best to focus, but I'm also watching a bull sale on my phone. So if I, you know, start waving my fists in the air, it means I bought something. It'll be fine.
Cool. What do you have a bid on?
Well, I'm waiting for my particular lot to come up, so we'll see how that looks.
All right. Yeah. All right. Well, we've got clouds that have entered the area. This is what we call, or what I call, a busted forecast, because we're not going to come near to where we were forecasting our high today. We were looking for a high of 48, but we're going to be stuck, it looks like, in the lower 40s today. That cloud cover thickened up, and it's not going anywhere today. So, but still, it's not a bad day out there with winds out of the west-southwest, about 5 to 15. Now, tonight, a high wind watch goes into effect late tonight. We'll see the winds start to increase out of the southwest at 20 to 35 and gusty after midnight. And we'll see temperatures basically staying in the mid to upper 30s overnight tonight with those southwest winds on the gusty side. And then tomorrow morning, a cold front quickly moves through between about 7 and 9 a.m. As it does, our winds will shift to the northwest, and they will be very strong with winds about 35 to 45 sustained, gusting over 50 at times, and falling temperatures. In fact, by evening, we'll have temperatures in the teens and wind chills below zero. If you're heading out Friday night, it's going to feel like we stepped back 2 weeks, as we're going to have single-digit lows and wind chills well below zero. And then a chilly Saturday, but sunshine returns, light winds, highs in the upper 20s. And then Sunday, the winds turn to the south, and we will have temperatures in the low to mid 40s, and then we're in the low 50s on Monday before back to reality for the rest of next week with temperatures in the 30s. So kind of that up and down roller coaster ride. And again, tomorrow, if you're doing any traveling, especially those high profile vehicles, those winds are going to be difficult to maneuver around. So just a very, very windy day. Thank goodness we're not expecting any snow with that. We could have a rain or snow shower as the front pushes through in the morning, but no accumulation expected out of that. And good thing we don't have snow on the ground either, because you get 40 to 50 mile an hour winds. If we had snow on the ground like we normally would this time of the year, that could have been a big, big mess. So thankfully, always look at the positive side.
That's exactly right. That would have changed everybody's perspective. And as we say about changing perspectives, you never know when you also might need a different perspective on your banking. And for that, you could call Ryan Bonesack with Equitable AgriFinance. You can find Ryan at 701-261-6529. He is providing long-term fixed rates for farmland financing for both our local farmers and our ranchers. So give him a call. He would be happy to visit with you. Again, that's Ryan Bonesack. Equitable AgriFinance, 701-261-6529. Dean, you mentioned to me before the show that you had a listener question come in that was actually more of one for me.
Right. And so I got a text from one of our listeners, and he asked, he's like, hey, you know, I've been seeing lately a lot of semis carrying these large black hoses on the back of their semis. He's like, what are those? And?
Well, I'm going to make a little bit of a generalization. Mm-hmm. And if I think, I can't picture what they're seeing because I haven't seen exactly what it was he saw in a semi, but my guess is he was probably seeing the field drain tile,
yeah,
which would normally be on the move as we get closer to spring.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably what he's watching for.
And he was, and I texted him back and I said, I'm 90% sure those are drain tiles that you saw. Again, he didn't send me a picture, but that's what I was thinking too, but I didn't want to put my neck out too far, but he texted back. He goes, well, what exactly do they use those for? And I said, well, mm-hmm. Exactly kind of what the name says. And you want to explain, Bridget?
Well, okay. So drain tile, these hoses, you know, we've looked at them before when we've been out at Ellingson Drainage on some of our Here We Grow fields, and the drain tile diameter can change. I'm going to say there's probably a lot in there that are probably about an 8-inch size diameter. They look like black long hoses, as you said, but they're not mm-hmm. quite that flexible, and they're ridged. Many of the drain tile hoses or drain tiles that we see up in this area are made by Prinsco Company, which is in Minnesota. And what you see then with those drain tile is actually they have small perforations in them. So after that plastic tile is laid in the ground, which by the way, it's a recycled plastic, it's laid in the ground and oftentimes they have a sock over them. So it looks like a large white fabric that covers the tile, the tube, and that way it filters out soil and so forth from entering into the tile line. And because of the perforations, that allows water to seep into the tile. There are tiles that run through the field. You can put them on specific spacings. And then the tiles run to the end of the field where they tie into a main, which then goes to at least one pump. If not, they need more depending on the size of the field, et cetera. And then that gets pumped off the field at the edge. And if you followed along last year for Here We Grow, one of the videos that we did in probably about July was out at our field near Avril, Minnesota, and I had the opportunity to use my newfound skill of how to turn on a tile pump. Thank you to the folks at Ellingson. That's a trade secret I have to keep to myself, but I was able to run that pump so we could get water coming out of it for our video. And the pumps, you know, it was incredibly clear water that comes out of there. It's filtered very nicely and runs right into a small depression in their ditch, and then that gets carried away with their natural drainage of the area.
And how deep are those buried, Bridget?
It varies, you know, depending on where you need them to go. But generally speaking, they're below a depth where you're not going to dig them up with tillage equipment. But if you needed to go out there and do some backhoe work, you'd find it pretty fast. Our tiles here are primarily plastic. If you were in the I states, I've got some friends who farm in Illinois. There, they look at tile that's more clay, like terracotta tiles. They're older. They've been in the ground probably since the 40s out there.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Why don't they call them, instead of drain tiles, why don't they call them drain hoses?
Well, remember back when this first started, they were actually terracotta tiles. So that was what they were made of. So they looked more like a tile.
Okay.
Now we still use the same term, but correct, they've changed just a little bit.
Gotcha.
So
gotcha.
Something different. Yeah.
Right.
All right. Well, we answered that question. That's at least one of the things that we wanted to cover today. Also, we know that we raise a lot of soybeans in this region, and we have a number of head of not only beef, but dairy animals. And soybeans really are a high quality protein source for dairy cattle, and they really can help boost milk production as well. Over the years, soybeans have seen quite a bit of change. We've transitioned into more of a high oleic bean. And if you slightly roast them, which, by the way, an edible soybean is called edamame, and if you steam or roast them, they're really good. So a little recipe tip for you. But if you are testing these heat-treated soybeans and using the high oleics, you can now start using them a bit more freely into rations, particularly for dairy animals. So for high-producing cows, you don't want to feed them a raw soybean. If they are adequately heat-treated, you can feed up to 5 pounds of soybeans in the ration. You may experience a slight decrease in the butter fat quantity. So you're going to want to keep an eye on that and adjust your rations accordingly. If you're feeding heat-treated, high oleic soybeans, you may economically support high production and feed beyond that 5-pound limit. So keep an eye out for how you can do that using a conventional bean. And then also be aware of the agronomics of the soybean, such as season length, the difficulty with managing weeds. You don't ever want to be taking soybeans off the field that are heavily weedy, because those weed seeds will get into the soybeans and they will not only transfer through your equipment, but through the feed to the animal. And then as that manure is spread, those weed seeds can still be viable, and then they can go off into the field and affect a non-target area. So by that, I mean, this is a way that we've actually seen things like water hemp move, where some, or even kochia. You have a patch of that in the field. You run your combine through there. You think you're just going to do a nice job of combining that area, getting it cleaned up. But those small seeds stay in your machinery. And then when you move to a field, they can spread that way. Or that particular crop is fed as a feed to livestock. The manure is captured, and then that is spread out on a field. And now you have weed seeds on a field where they didn't exist before. So equipment and livestock can actually be two pretty big ways that we see our weed seeds spread. So we've got to be careful out there.
Yeah. And we've got a guest in-house today. You want to I'm not even going to attempt Brady's last name. So if you want to, you can, but.
Okay. So I've met Brady in person, and Brady's probably even there with you today. Brady, I'm so sorry. There's so many consonants here, and I'm just not Norwegian enough for this. Krutchnavi? We're going to find out. Brady's with Michael Max, and I got to meet him at Agronomy on Ice. We had a fun discussion. And so Brady, as I'm going to call you, I could even go with Mr. Brady if I had to. He is from out in the Leonard, North Dakota area, and we're going to talk with him about Michael Max and what that means and what's going on farming-wise in this particular region. And we will do that when Brady joins us after the American Ag Network's update on markets. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. And if you are considering some changes in your insurance, particularly for crop insurance, hail, etc., you're going to want to talk to Nate at JLA Insurance. He is a farmer from Grandin, North Dakota, active farmer, and has insurance roots right here in North Dakota. He has been in business since 2004. He's a farmer. He knows exactly what you need for your farm and operation. Give Nate a call at 701-371-0311. For those of you who are following along on today's live stream, again, we live stream on Facebook, on YouTube, and Acres TV. Some of you are getting quite a quite a good chuckle. So I upgraded last month. I upgraded to a new iPad, and we discovered this with one of our guests with her phone. Depending on some of the hand actions that you make, there can be confetti. Just since our last segment, I have discovered a thumbs up, fireworks, and balloons. So if you're watching on the live stream, you just never know what I might accidentally trigger from over here.
Man, I hope they're all clean.
We won't know until we find out, now will we? Right. So I'm just going to keep sampling all of this. I mean, if only this could happen in real life. Like if I was sitting at the bull sale that I'm watching online as well as doing radio right now, if I was sitting at the sale and I won, and maybe I could make the fireworks go off by doing that, that would have been awesome. We'll see if it works. Okay, we have a guest, and Brady is with you. And so, Brady, I'm just going to apologize. I'm not getting your last name right.
It's Could super
you just
easy.
Help us out?
It is.
Really?
Super
it's
easy.
Krutchnavi.
There, he's got it already.
He helped me out earlier.
How many times did Dean practice that before he came on air?
Well, I had to really spell it out slowly for him, but he got it.
Got to tell you, there's a lot of consonants there, and I'm a little unfamiliar with that type of situation, so I apologize, Brady.
That's fine. Everybody else is, too.
So you're just Brady with Michael Max, right?
That is it. Yep. I am Brady with Michael Max, actually the owner of the Michael Max brand. So I guess call me what you want. I'll go with that.
Well, let's start out with who Brady is, where he's from, all those types of things before we even get to Michael Max.
Well, I am a farmer from long ago down by Lisbon, North Dakota. I grew up farming, didn't make it back in the late 80s, early 90s, and wandered my way through life to find a product that would actually work for the farmer. And through a lot of trial and tribulation and different things, we've got one that really helps a lot of different aspects, soil health, root growth, reducing our input costs. There's a ton that goes to it. So I could talk the rest of the day, but I'll let you guys guide the way.
Well, we'll have plenty of things to start out with. So, okay, as you led into Michael Max, first of all, Tell me about the product. I mean, you gave just a couple of teasers about that, but there's more to it. And where did the name Michael Max come from? How did we get to that?
Well, Michael Max, the first part is Myco, which stands for mycorrhizal fungi, specifically arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi. Okay.
Did you say muscular?
Arbuscular.
Thank you, because people are listening closely.
Yes, arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi. It's a fungi that is supposed to be in our soil, okay? Through the years of tillage and anhydrous and fungicides and chemicals and whatnot, I talk to farmers all over the country. They know they haven't been the best on their soil, right? This is a product, I wouldn't even say a product, this is a microbe that is supposed to be in our soil, but we have basically killed it through our farming practices, okay? What we are doing is reintroducing it into our soil. We can put it, in furrow or on the seed treatment. However, to get it back in our soil, because what this microbe does, and there's several million species of mycorrhizal fungi, so you really got to know what you're talking about, but it will go into your root system upon germination and basically colonize and make your root system really big, okay? And what is that going to do? That's going to bring in more of your nutrients, more of your water, more of your micronutrients. So there's ways we can work our soil and make a healthier plant and healthier soil all at the same time.
Hey, Brady, how,
okay.
So how long?
Go ahead, Dean.
All right. You're so in. You said, yeah, sorry, Bridget. You said in the 80s, you used to farm, and we all know what happened in the 80s. How long did it take you to come up with this? With your company, basically, and,
right.
And what steered you in this direction?
Well, I actually was working at another radio station. I was a sales manager for another radio station, and we're specifically in ag, right? Mm-hmm. So I would go to all the farm shows. I'd be looking at all the foliar fertilizers. I'd be looking at all this stuff. There's every year there's 150 new things these farmers got to rifle through and figure out what works and what doesn't, right? Right. Well, I found a little booth at one in a corner, and it said mycorrhize on it. And I went, I have no idea what this is. I have never heard of it, right? So I did some digging. Ended up taking at home online soil biology and soil science classes and figuring out how our soil is supposed to function. Once you figure that out, our soils are supposed to be 50-50 fungi to bacteria. When we go test soils right now, pretty much every soil I've tested is 90 to 95% bacteria. There's no balance, okay? So at that point, I knew we had to get that balance back to make our soil function the way it should, right? Bacteria has their purposes to convert, soluble minerals into plant usable. The mycorrhiza brings it to the plant. So there's a whole process under the ground that we're not taking advantage of. So what are we doing? We're side dressing. We're Y dropping. We're putting on a ton of fertilizer that we don't necessarily need because there's a lot down there. We're just not getting it because we don't have the big roots to go get it, right? So there's a whole dynamic under the ground that once you learn it and understand it, could really really help a farmer. And it's not about farming for yield. It's about farming for profit.
Interesting. Wow.
Okay. All right. I'm hoping, Dean, you come up with some more questions that come along with this, but I need to ask a few things here, Brady. So, all right. If you're using the Mycomax fungi, would you be using it in conjunction with traditional fertilizers, whether dry, liquids, et cetera, or are we backing that off for some reason?
Well, it's really, really hard for me to get a farmer or producer to back off year one, right?
Sure.
After they see the bigger roots, after they see the healthier plant, after they see, everything that goes with it, it's a lot easier for me year two go, yes, let's back this down. We have enough phosphorus in our soil that we can mine that for many, many years. I'm not saying you completely shut off your phosphorus inputs, right? But we can back it down because mycorrhizal fungi and some other bacteria will solubilize and naturally bring in the locked up phosphorus we have down there. And that's why we have so much locked up is we don't have anything to unlock it naturally, right? So there's a ton down there that we can go get. We're just not getting. So what do? We go put more on. That's our option.
So would you say this is a quote unquote, Bridget, you can do this so they get the confetti coming down.
Yeah, right?
Is this a quote unquote healthier way to farm then?
For your soil's benefit, 100%.
Okay.
And I say the plant is healthier, which is going to make a healthier fruit or produce.
Right.
So, yes, 100% is going to be a healthier way. And I don't ever tell anybody we can cut out fertilizer 100% because I do believe there is a definite benefit to fertilizer. I just feel that if we have the big root system, we have a better plant, we don't need as much, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, very true. So is your first step starting with a soil test to look at what's already available when you're working with a customer?
And that's, yes. I would say a lot of agronomists will do that for the client for me, and they will send it to mm-hmm. me and go, hey, this is what I got. So I get it, and I look at it, and I go, okay, well, you know, there's the Bray 1, Bray or P1, P2, Bray, blah, 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 right? Well, if you have the right microbes in the soil, it's all available, right? Mm-hmm. So I'll mm-hmm. look at that, but then I'm going to look at what's biology. Let's do another test, and let's just see what you got for biology. And that's where I come in and say, well, you're 90% bacteria dominant. You have no fungi left in your soil because tillage, one, UV light kills it, okay? So if we till for that last 100 years, we have killed this beneficial fungi out of our soil, right? So makes sense, right? Anhydrous, and I know a lot of farmers that use anhydrous because it's cheap. It's a good way of getting in. Great. They're some of my best clients, to be honest with you, because they will anhydrous, they will deep till every year, but they buy my product every year because they get the yield bump, right? So yep. They're my best clients. Now, there's other guys that want the soil health. They want to build their soil health and build their structure and their tilth and their soil. You know, maybe using some cover crops with it even helps. But, I mean, every farm I go to and I work with is different. You know, right down to the way their planters are set up. So it really depends on what the farmer's looking to do.
Okay. I'm getting questions and I'm got a plenty for me as well. So as I balance all of that out here, we need to catch up with the bottom of the hour news just so I can catch up on all the questions I've got for you, Brady.
Okay,
so when
good.
We return, we're going to keep talking about Micromax, and we'll be right back.
All right, sounds good.
Oh, this whole new game that I just learned about hand signals and what it trips on the iPad and the iPhone is going to make interviews so much fun for those of you on the live stream. You're going to love this stuff. So
she's like a kid in a candy store. I'm telling you, watching her on commercial break.
It's some hand signals work better than others, Dean.
I saw you trying a couple of them.
We'll keep practicing. So welcome back with our guest from Micromax. That is Brady Karchnavy. Did I get it right?
Pretty close. Kirch. No. Karchnavy.
Yep. Kirch. Karchnavy. See Bridget writing this down. Karchnavy. Okay.
Or if you just sneeze. Right. If so you sneeze, that'll work too.
That is true. We've been talking about your product, Micromax, and I've been getting a list of questions. So one of them is, you talk about this as a fungi, and there are billions of them in our soils. How do you isolate this particular one in order to maximize its benefits?
We did a lot of research and development before this product even came out. We actually took soil samples from all over North America to find which species of arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi are native to North America, right? Once we did that, we had to isolate out of those which ones are going to work the best on our corn, our beans, our wheat, all the way down to our peanuts and our cotton, tobacco. What works best on the crops we grow? That's how we came up with our 8-species blend, okay? So this has
eight
all been done.
Yep,
there's
okay.
8 different species of arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi, and you got to make sure it's arbuscular because those are the ones that will go in and actually increase your root system and rhizosphere by many, many, many times, okay? If it just says mycorrhizal fungi, like you said, there's millions of them, right? How do we know they're going to work or they don't work, right? Well, we did that for you, and we isolated it to the crops we grow here in North America. So we send it all the way into South America and over to Europe into Africa already. So it's going gangbusters.
Okay. That was one of the questions I got. Now, also, we were talking about tillage earlier, and you mentioned that the tillage we've done over the last many decades has changed our soil structure. We've lost fungi. We've found a higher percentage of bacteria in ratio to the fungi. But because this is an area where we're at in the Red River Valley with more tillage than other parts of the state, will tillage wreck the effectiveness of the Michaelmax fungi?
Okay, you're going to get your response year one. Okay, so this isn't something you have to do for 5 years to get it going, right? We have loaded this for bear because I understand. I grew up here. We have to till our soils, keep them black because we need the heating units in the spring, right? So I understand that. I also, when I put this together, understood that it gets really cold here and they have to survive the winter in order to work on next year's crop. So all of this went into the thinking of making this product. Does it affect it? Yes. So what I tell my guys, I said, if you're going to till, and I 100% agree with tilling, don't till as deep. They live in the top 8-10 inches. Okay. So if we till down 3 or 4, you know, with, you know, some kind of equipment, Selford or whatever, we are saving a good population of fungi for next year's crop. Because when we put next year's crop in, guess what? Those spores are laying there dormant, waiting for next year's crop. And that's how our soil is supposed to work. That's how the grassland biome worked when the buffaloes roamed, right? We just don't till as deep.
Okay. I have a plethora of questions. I just got a listener one. Do you have a cost per acre or something you want to ballpark for folks?
Yeah, Brady, I'll ballpark it because all of our rates are based on application. So I don't care if you're planting corn at 32,000 population or beans at 130,000. Ours is based off of spores per acre. I need enough spores down per acre to make a big impact on your crop and your field and your soil health, right? So I don't care the population of seed. I want X amount down per acre. Now, that's going to depend. In furrow, you're running around that $13 an acre. We also have partnered with Meristem where we have a talc graphite bucket, basically, where we can put it in. We put iron, we put zinc, we put magnesium in there. That's $20.50 an acre, but you're getting a full gamut to everything, right? So most of our prices are in that $13 to $15. Okay. We also have a seed treatment. We run through seed treaters at, you know, a bunch of local, you know, seed companies, you know, through their commercial seed treaters. So we have a gamut of products that's going to work pretty much for any farm equipment or whatever you're set up to do.
I've heard you say corn, soybean. I heard reference to peanuts. What specific crop are we looking at? Are we limited by any? Because I'm going to guess you don't go through a registration process the same way that we would with herbicides. Right. So you probably have more open field to look at.
Oh, 100%. I mean, 95% of plants on earth are mycorrhizal plants. Okay, there's 5% on earth. And there's some crops, okay? So sugar beets here in the Red River Valley are a non-mycorrhizal plant. Okay, so they cannot use these spores to boost that root, basically. Any kind of beet. Canola is another one. They cannot use them. Okay. Mustard's another one. Anything in the brassica family is non-mycorrhizal.
Okay.
Now, you look at some of the weeds we have a problem with, including water hemp, Palmer amaranth, they're non-mycorrhizal. They can't use these spores to boost their root system. So what are we going to have? We're going to have a really big root system on our crops, not necessarily on our weeds, so we can kill them.
I'm all into killing those types of things.
Yeah, I know.
Weeds, specifically. I should narrow that down.
I agree. Not everything.
Not everything. I got limits. So, right? Okay. Rainfall in this area, can too much rain drown out those shallow fungi, or can they die because it's too dry?
No and no. Okay, you're not going to drown them out. What's going to happen is they're going to go dormant. Okay, unless we're in a situation where we get way a lot, where you get a slough that's going to be there for the next 20 years, then there's going to be an issue, right? Dryness, it's going to make the bigger root system. Okay. And if there's no water there, there's no water. There's nothing I can do, right? I can't control the weather just like anybody else. But I'll tell you right now, I see bigger yield impacts and bigger impacts in the lighter, sandier, drier soils than I do in the, say, clay or irrigated land, because I have that big root system, right?
Okay. So does, along those lines, does tiling make a difference?
Tiling helps, especially when we're looking at, you know, we have compaction issues a lot of people are complaining about. The fungi is kind of like, I don't know how you'd say this, up in the tundra, you know how the tundra is kind of spongy? This is a fungi. Mm-hmm. So this is supposed to be in our soil. If we had good soil fungi, our compaction issues would be way, way less than what they are right now.
And Brady, okay, that's a fair statement.
Yeah. And Brady, what kind of feedback have you gotten from the farmers that are using your product?
Very good feedback. I mean, we've been doing this for, I've been in the mycorrhizal industry for almost 15 years.
Okay.
I've had, the MycoMax is out and this is year six. And if you look at our website, there is a plethora of images and stuff come straight from the farmer. And they are just absolutely wowed by the root systems. So, you know, the yield, like I said, you're going to get a yield bump. In the drier soils, you're probably going to get a bigger one. In the wetter, you're probably not as much, you know, but it's more about soil health and reducing our fertilizer and farming for a profit.
Right. Sounds like a no-brainer.
It really is, but it's the thing is, nobody's heard of me. No, nobody's heard of it. You know, I go into a farm and say, hey, what about mycorrhizal fungi? And they go, what are you talking about? Right? You crazy or what?
Now, where's your are you focused here in the valley or are you starting to expand nationwide?
We're nationwide. Like I said earlier, we're into South America already. We have been for 3 years, down into Chile, Peru, Brazil, Argentina, Zambia. We're sending some over there, England. So yeah, it's growing by leaps and bounds.
That's great.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
You mentioned a balance with the fungi and bacteria.
Yep.
Over time, I know you said the spores are there and that really sets the stage for the fungi to continue to grow. Do you have a way to measure that? Do you look for a ratio between the bacteria and the fungi? What does any of that look like?
Well, and then that's soil testing. I mean, we have soil labs that will legit tell me how much fungi to bacteria ratio. But I only say let's do it every couple years because it's not going to happen overnight. You're going to get a response year one, but this is going to take time to build our soil back, our fungi back. For example, mm-hmm. I have a client that was with me 6 years now. And he's not buying from me this year because his soil has transformed in that last 6 years. He's switched his tillage to a strip till method or very shallow, has really switched some stuff up to where I went up there and dug last year and there's earthworms everywhere. It's nice, marbly, good texture soil where before it was basically blow sand. There is a way we can do it. Soil testing is part of it.
Okay, that helps a lot to make some of these, help answer some of the questions I'm getting from folks who are listening. All right.
So yeah, there's an end. There is an end game to this. So
okay.
It's not every year. Well,
that it's going to be the same thing.
Right.
You have to look at that in sequential year planning as you're doing rotations, et cetera, because you're not necessarily looking at the cash crop on the field. You want to look at that field overall and its long-term plan,
exactly.
Not just the crop on it.
Exactly. And I mean, it comes to the point where when guys see what happens, they go, okay, what's it easier for me to put on? So corn is super easy. Most guys will just throw it in their starter fertilizer and away they go. Takes them no time whatsoever, right? So at that point, that farmer is putting it on his corn fields every year. As they rotate, all of his land is getting it, right? So it's a process to build it. Yep.
How do folks find you, Brady, when they want to talk to you directly and look at specific fields and opportunities? Where are they going to look for you?
The best way is go to farmfungi.com. That's our website, and there is loads of information on there. It'd take you days to go through it. My phone number's on there, direct email, I mean, everything. So farmfungi.com. And if there's any gardeners or people like that out there, we do have a garden pack, which is gardenfungi.com.
Oh, that's good to know because we just had Don Kinsler on yesterday talking about all things gardening. So this is a perfect transition from yesterday to today.
Yep, there you go. It's right there.
Okay, I'm looking at this product, by the way, and I heard you say that you work with Meristem. You have a novel delivery methods. You can put it in with seed treat. So we're looking at a dry, and will it matter if it does it have to stay in heated storage through the winter?
No.
Last question here.
I would say you keep it at 50 degrees or more. Most guys just throw it on their, if they don't use it all, they'll throw it on their shelf in their shop, you know, and at 50 degrees, whatever, room temperature. It doesn't have to be in a fridge. It doesn't have anything special. Just keep it, don't let it, I wouldn't let it sit outside and freeze for months on end, but just
don't
keep,
just leave it on the spray trailer parked in the unheated storage.
Yeah, and once you mix it with water to put in with your fertilizer, whatever, use it. I mean, that's not going to stay over winter. They will activate, so keep it dry, and you can keep it actually for up to 5 years.
Sweet. All right. Well, hopefully folks are starting to look you up on the internet and reach out. Brady, thanks for taking the time to visit with us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks so much, Brady.
Yeah, thank you.
Sorry for all the this over here while I'm trying to make my iPad show confetti and balloons for you.
You're not sorry. Who are you fooling?
A little bit. Sorry.
Well, don't go anywhere. When we come back, we'll have a recap of the weather, and also we'll hit on a couple of ag topics right after the break. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. 1:53 in the afternoon. We've got cloudy skies, temperatures in the upper 30s, low 30s. In the Northern Valley, but just out to our west, temperatures already in the mid-40s. So we've got cloudy skies right now, but give it a couple hours, and we're going to see some more sunshine start to emerge here in the FM area. So we'll call it mostly cloudy now, turning partly cloudy later this afternoon, with highs topping out today in the 40s. And then, again, a high wind watch is in effect up and down the valley, and wind advisories on either side of that. So, basically, it's going to be a windy overnight and a very windy Friday across the area, with temperatures bottoming out tonight in the mid to upper 30s, so they're not going to move a whole lot. And then that's our daytime high for tomorrow morning, because temperatures fall all day as a cold front hits between about 7 and 9 in the morning. We could trigger off an isolated snow shower with it. But winds tomorrow, late morning into the afternoon hours, will be out of the northwest at 30 to 45 and gusting at times over 50. So very windy conditions tomorrow, and then much cooler weather for Friday night and Saturday, with 20s for the high on Saturday, and we warm up quickly. 40s on Sunday, low 50s on Monday. So that roller coaster ride continues, and thankfully no snow. I mean, no measurable snow in the forecast as this system goes by, because we'd be dealing with a big headache. Our next chance of any measurable snow would come next Tuesday, and that looks to be minor, and by minor, very minor. It shouldn't cause any problems at all. If we get any accumulation at all. So no big storms on the horizon, but again, according to the LRC, as we head towards mid-month, and mid-month all the way through that first week in April, I think we're going to have a couple of decent-sized storms roaming through the area. One of those might be all rain, but I do believe one of those should be a pretty decent snowfall one as well. So something we'll keep an eye on, Bridget.
Always do, because this is a month of transition when you look at March and what's going on here. It's supposed to come in like a lion and go out like a lamb. I feel like it's been a lamb all the way along, but let's keep it that way, because folks don't mind the idea of maybe a little bit of snow, but we just don't need to get buried at this time of year.
Exactly. And, you know, a little bit of mixture, you know, a little bit of rain first, then a little bit of snow, and then a slow melt after that. That would be perfect, because we still need the moisture. Okay. We're still a little behind on moisture, but taking a look through spring, I think we're going to be okay moisture-wise. I don't see us going into any drought conditions around here. I think we'll be pretty close to a little bit above average when it comes in terms of precip. So that's good news for all of us.
So we're going to make it work quite well. And speaking of making it work quite well, let's go to Winter, South Dakota, where we have the brothers that are Rowdy, Ryder, and Roper Moore, and their friend Garrett Phillips. These four boys, the oldest of them is 20, the youngest is 12, they have had their own livestock herds. They've had their own Angus herds, and they decided last year that they wanted to do a little bit more and maybe even start selling some of their bulls. Then they, by chance, had a producer that they knew down in Oklahoma who said, "Why don't you sell my bulls too?" And so these four boys, I say boys, again, the oldest is 20, they now are putting on their own sale. This will be their second annual sale. It'll be Saturday, March 22nd at the Winter Livestock Auction. And they will be having about 45 bulls of the Angus breed and 45 Simmentals. They are doing everything. They have worked on the washing and the clipping. When you do clipping, you're pretty much cutting their hair on those animals, just like a professional stylist would, and the kids will be running them through the pens that day, running them through the ring. And in fact, Rowdy, who is 20 years old, Rowdy is going to be the auctioneer for the sale. He had started doing some auctioneer work at age 14 with his dad. Now he can do the sale himself. So here you have four young entrepreneurs. They have their own herds, and then they are going to be bringing those in for sale and doing everything from start to finish on their own. Last year, their top end bull went for $13,500, and they're hoping to increase over that this year, especially with prices the way they sit today. So things have been going fairly well at a number of auctions. In fact, I still have one I'm watching over here online too.
You're always busy. You're always busy.
There's a lot of multitasking going on over here, folks. You just because you're talking about fungi in the soil doesn't mean you can't be watching bulls and bred heifers being sold over here on the other side of your desk.
So. All right, but before we go, let's get some confetti. Let's get the confetti going, Bridget.
Oh, okay, the confetti, I have to do it like this.
Right?
Does it work?
There we go. All right. So for Bridget, myself, I want to thank everybody for joining us today on Weather and Ag in Focus. Don't go anywhere. Jay Thomas Show is coming up next.